So yesterday, I took a look at Sharon Giovinazzo. I hope I got the name right. Okay. Now, did I practice it at all? Okay. Anyway, I think a lot of people call her Sharon G, as I understand it. But say that. Yeah, I missed that, Gabe. Anyway. And that's exactly what Gabe told me. Gabe's got a good sense of humor, that's for sure. So anyway, I read her biography, her little bio, and here's what I learned. She's proven that collaboration is the key to reducing the economic burden of vision loss. She's known as a strategic thinker, understands that employee growth and development keep the agency or the organization top-notch. She's won a number of awards, including the Tom Pfeiffer Award. That's from the AAR. She's won awards from the U.S. Army Freedom Team, and then also the American Legion Awards, awards for military and academic excellence, a Vision Serve Alliance, Romano, I'm sorry, Roxanne Mayros Organizational Champion Award, and a certificate of recognition from the Honorable Fiona Ma, California State Treasurer, also recognized for embodying the Lions International spirit of service. So that's a heck of a bio, that's for sure. So anyway, is Lisa back in, or should we? Okay, so Sharon, if you don't mind, we'll do a little door prize and hand it over to you.
So we're going to do, let me eat the mic, a $25 gift card for Target. Donated. I'm sorry, given by, can't believe I said that word, Glendale Burbank chapter. Let's go. The winner is Nicolette Noy. Yay! We have any volunteers in the room besides the mic runner? Okay, I'll find some. She's right in front of you. Yeah.
Welcome, Sharon. We are so happy that you were at the lighthouse today.
Oh, no. Y'all are stuck to listen to me now. And so, as y'all take your afternoon nap after having a great lunch, first, thanks so much for letting me join you this weekend and join my new California family. And thank you, Gabe, and to the conference committee for inviting me to do this today. So, I'm always a little intimidated by when I present my story to an audience of people who are blind, simply because my story is not unique in any way. There are so many people sitting in this room that came before me and they paved the way for me, and it's made my journey so much easier. And for me, this is a very vulnerable and personal story to share, but it's my honor to share it with you. So I'm going to talk a little bit about myself, as much as I hate to. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about the lighthouse, because of course I'm going to get a shameless plug-in for the San Francisco Lighthouse, right?
Of course, of
That's
course.
right. I mean, this is a paid commercial opportunity. So anyway, I know I have a captive audience. Are they all tied to their chairs? Because they might run out as soon as I start. And so please join me, and each journey begins with just one step. Hello, darkness, my old friend. This is a familiar, hello, darkness, my old. I won't give up on my day job, I promise. It's a familiar line from a Simon and Garfunkel song that I never thought would become my life song. I was never able to imagine a world filled with darkness, totally void of light. When I was a child, I would sleep with a nightlight under the mattress, and it would give a warm, no, that wasn't under the mattress. The flashlight was under the mattress, and the nightlight would give the warm amber glow. You know, because in case the lights went out, there's things that go bump in the night. I didn't view darkness as my friend. There was things I couldn't see. As an adult, I lived in Alaska, where the summers were filled with light 24 hours a day, and the winters were cold and dark. They were very cold. That's why I live in California now. But they were never completely dark. The sky glows like a twilight. The northern lights would light up the sky, dancing around like dancers in a Broadway musical, adorned with beautifully colored costumes, blowing like drapes in a gentle breeze. Who would have thought that my worst nightmare would come true? It was May of 2001. I'd not been feeling like myself. Something was different. Something was wrong. I'd been suffering from headaches. It was probably the worst pain I've ever felt. It felt like somebody had my head in a trash compactor. I wouldn't release the button. The pressure grew in my head, and it felt like it was going to blow up. I knew that I had to do something, so I made a doctor's appointment. I told the nurse about my headaches and explained it. My vision seems to be affected, and so they make an appointment for me for that day. Well, I guess that was good, but now I have to get up and drag myself out of bed and get ready to go to the doctor. So I did. You know, I forced myself in the shower, and I swear it was a hailstorm in that shower. It really was. And I just put on the biggest, baggiest pants and shirt that I could find, and probably Crocs, knowing me, whatever I could slip my feet into. Got in the car and I drove down the road. This is a really good idea, by the way, folks. I got in the car and drove down the road. I couldn't read the street signs. I was having a really hard time seeing the lights. In fact, I was probably just going along with the flow of traffic. Obviously not very well, though, because I kept on getting people honking at me, you know, and I didn't even have a bumper sticker on the back of my car that says, please honk if you see this. And so I got to the doctor's office, and the receptionist handed me some paperwork. So I found a chair and I sat down, and I put the pen in my left hand because I'm in my right mind. So I use my left hand. And I went to go. Oh, there you go. Thank you, lefties back there in the back. I knew that table was going to be the hecklers back there. And so I sat down to fill out the paperwork, and I couldn't see anything. And so I went back up to the reception as I said, you must have made a mistake. What you handed me was blank. I think that she looked at me like I had three heads, but I couldn't really tell at that point. So they just brought me back to the back. They helped me fill out the paperwork. The doctor came in and I told him, I said, yeah, you know, I've been having headaches and it seems like my vision's blurry or something. So he walked me out into the hallway. This was just the general practitioner. He said, can you read the sign at the end of the hallway? I couldn't see the sign or the end of the hallway. And he says, well, he said, there's really nothing that I can do for you here. So he made arrangements for me to see a neurologist. That was the last day I drove a car because I left it parked at the doctor's office. I know, right? It was May 9th of 2001. I'll never forget that day. That's one of those things like everybody who was around when Kennedy got shot, you know, you remember when that last day was. So 3 days went by and I was just feeling more and more miserable every day. In fact, there was times that I think I would have had to get better to die. The dishes were piling up in the sink. The laundry needed to be done. Yes, I was married, but you know. We all know how men are, right? Don't tell any of them down. But every time I would pick my head up off the pillow, it felt like it would just fall back down again because it felt like it weighed 100 pounds. When I would stand up, the room would spin. So I took a shower to get ready to go to the doctor. I ran into the wall. I think I hollered, ouch. We'll say ouch. That's probably not the word that I use, but that's probably, that's what I'll say. It could be a PG audience here. And in all honesty, I had been doing that a lot lately. There was no explanation. I just thought I was being clumsy. So finally made it to the phone. And, you know, luckily it was a push button phone. This was before the touchscreen phones. And I called a taxi to go to the doctor. I arrived at the doctor's office, and I was very graceful when I walked in there. I tripped over a chair, regained my composure, and went to the window. And the receptionist asked me in a kind voice to please sign in. And I felt around for the, you know how it is, guys. You know, I didn't know I was, you know, not able to see so well yet.
Yeah.
And she saw that I was in no shape to do anything. So she just said that we'll bring you back to the back. And so they did, and they helped me fill out the paperwork. We completed, and I lay down on the table. Well, the doctor opened the door, kind of startled me, and I wanted to be respectful. So I sat up a little bit too fast. The room began to spin, and you know all the stories that go along with that. And so I talked to the neurologist. I said, I'm having these awful headaches. I said, and my vision seems to be getting worse day by day. He completed an exam, and he says, I don't know what's going on. So there was no diagnosis offered. He stated that what I really needed to do was go see an eye doctor to eliminate any eye problems. Well, good. We can do this. My eyes hurt, whatever. So he made an appointment that day. It was already after hours. It was already 5 o'clock. He called a doctor that was right down the road. So I got to the eye doctor that night, and he met me in the lobby, took me back to the room. And I swear they have these brightest lights known to man. And I already have a headache. I'm already not feeling good. And so they just start shining stuff into my eyeballs. And he didn't really know. I remember I still could read maybe the 20 over 200 lines. So I still could see at that point in time. And he didn't offer a diagnosis, but he offered a suggestion. He says, I believe that you're suffering from a demyelinization disease. And even though I was a nurse, an LPN, I wasn't sure what a demyelinization disease was. So he had explained it to me that it's kind of like an electrical cord, but it's with your nerves that, you know, like when you run over the electrical cord with your vacuum cleaner and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Well, the nerves in my brain was shorting out, basically, is what happened. And so I was sure that going and getting an MRI and everything that he suggested to do then, that this would fix everything. And I told the doctor, I said, I'm sure this isn't anything serious. You know, I'm sure you won't find anything wrong with this. I mean, of course I knew that. I mean, because he's only the one who went to medical school for umpteen years. And, you know, me, I was diagnosed myself. So. And so we went, we made the appointment. He called my neurologist. We went for the MRI. And the doctor walked me downstairs and asked me how I was getting home. I explained that my husband was going to pick me up. And so he took my arm and he walked me to the front of the office. We called my husband. We went downstairs. He offered to stay with me, but I really didn't want to put up with anybody at that time. So I graciously declined and I sat on the curb waiting on my husband. And he said if there was anything that he could do to please call him. And so I sat there and I waited. At that point, my husband drives up and I get in the car and he asked me, he said, so what did the doctor say? I said, well, they don't really know. They're going to have to run more tests. He was getting about as frustrated at that point as what I was. He said, let's go home. He says, you look tired. I remember leaning my head against the glass of the window and just thinking, I'll just be glad when this is over. Because obviously it was going to end, right? And so he mumbles under his breath, you know, when are these doctors going to do something for you? I knew he was getting frustrated. He couldn't fix me because men want to fix things. And when they can't fix something, they get mad at it, right? That's how it works, right? And so I assured him that once we got the X-ray and the MRI, that everything would be fine and they'd be able to fix it. So I remember when we got home, and it's so ingrained in my memory. Rest your heart, little Joe. He passed away in 2013. And I just remember him mumbling under his breath, looks like another night without dinner. I was just, at that point, I was mad. I was mad at him. I was mad at myself. I was mad at the situation. But at that point, I didn't care. I just went and crawled back in bed, closed my eyes, fell asleep. 3 days passed after the MRI. And then that day, the doctor called me. And he told me, he said, you have lesions on your brainstem. And he said, so we definitely believe, after we run some more tests, that you have multiple sclerosis, and that's what's causing the vision loss. So at last, I had an answer, and I asked him, I said, so what are you going to do to make it better? And so that's when he kind of explained the disease process to me. So it's kind of one of those things, you're just stuck with it for the rest of your life. And so I hung up the phone in disbelief. Number one, what did he just tell me, and what did he just tell me over the phone? I was glad that I didn't have to make my way to the doctor's, but it's just one of those things. I called my husband and I tried to explain to him through the tears what the doctor just saw. He told me, he said, don't worry. He says, we'll talk about it when I get home. Don't worry. Yeah. Easy for you to say. And so I returned to my bed and minutes turned into hours, hours turned into days. In fact, it just seemed like an eternity. As my vision declined, my self-esteem declined. It was a constant emotional roller coaster. It really was. I was unable to accept the thought of being unable to see normally and being able to live a life. So finally, I told myself, because I was given a referral by the eye doctor who suspected the demyelinization disease. He was on the board of the rehab agency that was less than a mile from me. So I was perfectly aligned with this. So that's what I did, was I called the agency. And I remember I was probably angry when I had that first meeting with the people. I questioned what I was capable of doing, and they just let me know day by day what I was capable of doing with training. So we started off small, what I thought was small, orientation and mobility training. Learn how to walk with the red and white cane, right? And so an instructor arrived at my house, and I was less than a month in from my diagnosis and losing vision. I was 20 over 420 over 800 at the time. So he told me what to, you know, what to expect. The first day we only walked around the block. After about 6 months of orientation and mobility training, twice a week, as many times as I tried to cancel, he's like, we'll just go a little ways today. So I went from being afraid to step on or off the curb to being able to travel independently. But the funny thing was, oh, come on, y'all are showing off now, you know. But one of the funny parts of that part of the journey was, it was the week before Thanksgiving of 2001. After 6 months of these lessons, he came in to set the next appointment. And he says, during the next appointment, he said, you're going to learn how to take the bus. And I remember I just looked at him like, I said, and his name was Mitch Hansen. I said, Mitch, I said, I didn't take the bus when I could see. Why the hell would I now? And it, the dry sense of humor that he had, Harvard educated. So, I mean, you know, smart, smart guy. He says, well, you could drive when you could see. That's probably why you didn't take the bus.
Yeah.
Why didn't somebody tell me this 6 months ago? So you mean all I have to do is learn alternate ways of doing stuff that I can live my life independently? And so that was really a wake-up call for me. It really was. And so then I, you know, I embraced the independent living skills, computer skills. I was able to manage my household duties. I began learning Braille. I kind of felt like I was in kindergarten all over again. I was learning my ABCs. These were just harder, though. But now I've learned how to speak in Braille, you know, bump, 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 ba-dum, bump. Sorry. It's April Fool's Day, guys. It's my favorite holiday, and I really haven't pranked anybody yet. So, you know, it might be coming, though. And so I remember my first visit, though, on the rehab side. And they asked, they said, so what are your goals? I said, to get back in my car and drive. That's all I could focus on. You know, I had gotten to the point I could no longer see the computer screen. So that got moved upstairs. But it all came together because there was services there for me. When I was taking the computer classes, we started off on magnification, and they kind of read the tea leaves because I was already up to 4 times magnification. They said, why don't we introduce you to this speech technology that we have? I'm kind of glad that they did, because within 7 months, I had went from 20/20 vision to nothing vision in 7 months. So very good JAWS user, because they taught me well. But then I just kind of embrace it. You know, I'm an Army veteran. I was a combat medic.
Wow. Wow. You know,
I was 31 years old. I now knew that life wasn't over. I knew if I was going to continue to lead an independent and fulfilling, my tang got all tangled up. I couldn't see in front of my eye teeth there for a second. You know, if I was going to lead a fulfilling life, that I would need to pursue higher education. I had a high school diploma. I was getting ready to go back to nursing school. I was working as an LPN. In the fall of 2001, I was going to go back to nursing school to become an RN. But, you know, chasing a person with a red and white cane in one hand and a needle in the other, They do a lot more damage when they jump out the window, folks. Let me tell you. And so I decided to... Y'all are a great audience, by the way. You know, lots of feedback. I like it. And so I visited the local community college where I decided to pursue an associate's degree in human services. I knew two things. I could use a computer and I could talk. So I was like, we'll start here. We'll do this because I know I can. So I had confidence, but I was still really questioning my confidence and what my abilities was. But as one success built on another, so did my confidence. And so the same month I began college, I began, and that was January of 2002, I began working on the glove packing line. So, you know, when you go to the airport and they frisk you, molest you, whatever they do with those gloves, well, you can thank a person who's blind in upstate New York for doing that for you. So even though I had a lifetime of experience, I'd been in the Army, I was working as an RN, I had no marketable skills whatsoever as a person who was blind. So I had to start somewhere. Never once did I view that as my only job that I would ever have, though. I viewed it as a stepping stone. I remember that first day I packed exactly 38 boxes of gloves. It was epic. But I worked hard and I set my goals higher every day. By the time I got off of the glove line, I was packing 225 boxes a day. And so, I mean, and so, but while I was packaging those gloves, I was taking college classes, 21 and a half credit hours while working full time. So I would listen to my books during the day and I would go to college at night. And then I got bored with packing gloves. And so I decided to learn how to sew. Nothing like having a sighted person teach the blind person how to sew and they run the needle through their finger. And I never did, knock on wood, because I still sew. I love to quilt. So, but the moral of the story is I was given the tools that I needed to be successful, right? I mean, that's everybody in this room. You were given tools one way or another to be successful, whether that was DOR and Joe supporting you over there, or whether you just got it on your own. You had really great parents that did it for you. But for me, now all of a sudden I'm back contributing to society. In fact, when I was sewing, we were sewing items for the military. So they kind of made a personal link with my BB life, you know, the before blindness life. We all have AB and BB life, or some of us have AB and BB lives. So I continued with my studies. I got really interested in public policy and consumer relations. So I moved into a position. And how, funniest story on how I got that position. I was writing letters, and someone who's been in the blindness field for a while or adjacent to the blindness field remembers a name, Lorraine Lidoff. And I was writing letters to her because I was appalled that my insurance did not pay for my vision rehab service. If I break my leg, I get physical therapy. Why can't I get vision therapy? And we're still fighting that fight, right? This has not changed, folks. We're going to change it. We're going to change it, at least in California. So my CEO at the time was Don Legitacy, and he came down with one of the letters that made it to D.C. And he said, did you write a letter to somebody in D.C.? And I was like, yes, sir. He said, come to my office. I was like, oh, damn, I'm fired. I just was pretty sure that I was fired. But no, he created a position. And so I started to do public policy, and that kind of launched me into a new territory. I had great mentors along the way, and I've got to tell a California story. I've got to digress for a moment, and I've got to tell a California story that came very early on in that period of time. Don Legitacy, the one that I just mentioned, introduced me to one of the most beautiful and wonderful people in California, and I get to sit in her seat today, and that's Anita Aaron. And how he introduced me, he said, I want to introduce you to the most wonderful female CEO who's blind. And he said, because someday you're going to be like her. Now, who do you think was the first person I called when I found out I got the job in San Francisco? I called Don Legitacy. And then I think I called Anita Aaron. I was so excited. And so eventually the journey would lead me to become a lobbyist in D.C. for National Industries for the Blind.
Yeah.
Then I went to Raleigh, North Carolina to serve as the VP of a large blindness organization. And then I spent the last 8 years in Little Rock, Arkansas.
Oh, yeah.
Where I was CEO of a residential training facility for people who are blind.
Yeah.
But through all this, I learned that a lack of sight did not have to translate into a lack of vision. In a short 7 months, I had lost the last of my sight, but I had built a solid foundation of skills that and while enduring that constant emotional roller coaster, there was a scared little girl behind the brave face that would face the public. But as the skills that I've talked about grew, so did my ability to not mourn such a loss. And I never did it alone. So forever in darkness with help, I've come to realize that the warm amber glow of the nightlight or the bright shining sun will never be seen again. But I can feel the warmth of the sun. I can smell the roses as they bloom. I can taste the salt in the air as we drive by the ocean. And I can hear the cry of a newborn baby. I missed all these things before because I was too busy seeing things. But now I can appreciate everything around. And I've learned how to use all of my senses. I still have vivid memories of what things look like, but now I see more than ever before. But even in darkness, I've come to accept that there are still things that go bump in the night and that there may be a monster just lurking around the corner. But I'm no longer going to spend my life worrying what those are because I'm no longer afraid of them because of people like you. But in the words of William Shakespeare, he that is struck and blind cannot forget the precious treasure of his eyesight lost. But for me, now the loss of sight has truly been a gift because I have been given, and for that, I'll be forever in debt for those gifts that's been given to me. So today, fast forward. And so today I have the honor to serve as the CEO of the San Francisco Lighthouse Fly. The San Francisco Lighthouse, many iterations ago, was founded in 1902 by Josephine Rowan. Her brother was blind, so she wanted to fill a need. She organized a group of women who met in the basement of the San Francisco Public Library to provide reading services with the intent of helping blind and visually impaired individuals access printed materials. Still a need today, right? We just have a lot different technology. And so this was California's first private agency to serve people who are blind. It was born right there in 1902. So our mission is to promote the independence, equality, and self-reliance of people who are blind and have low vision. We serve people from birth to earth, womb to tomb. Come on, guys. And so we begin with our Little Learners program, and that's our 0 to 3 program. Wow. We work with families, and the program is designed to help young children ages birth to 3 who are blind, deafblind, have low vision, neurological visual impairment, and developmental delays that include blindness or low vision. One of the cornerstones of our services at the Lighthouse is our adaptive technology training. And it used to be a lot better before Gabe came on board, but you know. Not really. In all honesty, we love having Gabe on there. I mean, he brings a whole new level of excitement to the Lighthouse. A whole new level of crazy. And they thought it was a whole new level of crazy when I came on board. So, and at the Lighthouse, we also provide consulting services for businesses. We invite companies when they are updating technology, websites, to reach out to us, and we'll help with those evaluations. And of course, we have our independent living services, and each one of those services are customized to meet the needs of the people. We meet them where they're at, and we get them to where they need to go. We have immersion programs, from changing vision and changing lives to our guide dog immersion program in partnership with Guide Dogs for the Blind. Please stop off and visit their booth, and I hear they're giving away puppies, so everybody stop by. Go out and say, I'm here for my puppy. And then, of course, orientation and mobility, essential living skills, Braille, case management services. We have a robust employment program from our employment immersion program to vocational training in our state-of-the-art manufacturing facility in Alameda to some upcoming and really cool vocational training, which will have industry standard certifications in high-demand fields in the Bay Area. And we will have employer products. And I bet you DOR likes to hear those words. Not at all. And we have youth programs, community services, health and wellness. We serve people who are deafblind in all of those programs. And then, of course, since 1950, we've had our Enchanted Hills camp. Where's my campers? And that provides valuable opportunities for recreation and fun, being outside. It's challenging, and it can still be accessible. And we're located on 311 acres on Mount Veeder in Napa. I mean, how bad is that? We're just 10 miles west of Napa. And our summer programs include our Yes Academy, a teen session family camp, STEM camp, music camp, Sensing the Seasons, Little Learners, Deafblind Camp, Adult Camp, Adults with Developmental Disabilities, Changing Vision, Changing Lives, Horse Camp, and Woodworking Camp. Wow. And, you know, many of the people who we serve or any of the service providers in here have faced a lifetime of stereotypes and misconceptions and a life of people lowering the bar for them. But because of help and support that we have from donors and supporters, we can continue to provide these services in Northern California. But I ask each one of you in this room, whether you're a partner agency or whether you're a member, whoever you are, whether you're a friend or a previous friend of the Lighthouse, I ask that you come to me and you walk along this journey with me. So there doesn't have to be people living in isolation and darkness that blindness can cause. And we're simply here to serve the community. We don't want people to say, "Hello, darkness, my old friend." We want to be there for them. So I want to thank you for allowing me to have this platform today and to share my story and for welcoming me so warmly to CCB this week. Gabe, thank you.
Well, thank you, Sharon, for that very inspirational speech. Oops, popping peas again. I'm sure we've got time for questions. And so let's go ahead and start with Zoom this time, just for the heck of it. Any questions on Zoom?
Bring them on.
Ending in 388, you may now unmute.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Sharon. It's Mitch Pomerantz here in Pasadena.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine, and you know, we haven't crossed paths since you came to our Pasadena Host Lions Club New Year's Eve breakfast a few years back.
That's right. That would have been in 2017.
That's right. And we are so thrilled that you're here in California. We know what you did to turn the Arkansas agency around. You did a fantastic job. I was asked, as I'm sure lots of other people were, when the position at the Lighthouse came open, I was asked who would I recommend, and I'm sure I was one of about 50 people who came with your name first and foremost. So we are just so thrilled that you're with us. And Donna says hi.
Hi, Donna.
and Donna is the daughter of a Marine, and as a result of that, I will thank you for your service in the Army, because I know you had a career there, and that you did a fantastic job there. But we're just so thrilled that you are with us in California, and hopefully, because our club is up and running, if you ever get down to LA, we'll hopefully get a chance to get together, and if it works out, we'll even get you to one of our meetings. In fact, I'm going to be the program chair again beginning in July. Maybe we'll arrange to have you speak to our club via Zoom.
Would love that. And I'm even willing to come down and make a visit. I'm going to be down there in May, so I'll coordinate with you, Mitch.
Fantastic. All right, we'll put this together.
All right, sounds good. Thank you so much, Mitch. It's so good to hear from you.
Absolutely. You take care.
Okay, let's see if we've got any questions in the room.
They're all asleep. I bored to death.
Any questions?
I know. Where's my heckler? Oh,
somebody does.
I think they're running around with microphones.
Yeah, that's right.
Good afternoon. My name is Pamets, and you have to come down to LA, but you have to cross the border first. That's Bakersfield. but I wanted to say, as someone who I lost my sight in 2000, I truly understand your journey, and you have your journey. I have my journey. I lost mine in 2000, and I have an auto-optic immune deficiency, where my immune system said, "Oh hell no," your eyes can't see no more. So I truly am glad that you're at the lighthouse. And why did you live in Arkansas? That was my other question.
Why wouldn't you?
I know, exactly.
It's a great place to be from.
Well, good. You know what? I there's a show that I like that they do out of Arkansas, Fix to the Fabulous. I do like
it. It was great for 8 years. I love the agency. I love the people, but they just had two devastating tornadoes go through.
I do not miss that.
The agency, yeah. World Services for the Blind is fine. That was my first thing, was call World Services for the Blind to make sure they were okay.
So. I heard. No, but I do thank you for speaking, and I do understand your journey. Been there, done that, and I'm left-handed, so I get you. We have right-sided brains.
There you go. You be my soul sister. My vision soul sister. All right, I heard Margie back there somewhere.
Well, you're hearing her right now.
There you go. She does not disappoint, folks.
First of all, thank you, Sharon. And what a wonderful, refreshing directorship. And what a wonderful direction I know the Lighthouse is going to go in. You're just an incredible person that brings a lot of hope to our community that live in the Bay Area, and our community that loves and enjoys Enchanted Hills Camp. Everybody in this room, about a month ago, I sent Sharon an email. And I knew she was in the military, and I asked her if she was a black belt or if it was her military training.
No, no.
Sharon, would you tell the rest of that story, please?
Oh, Margie. Margie. And this is not an April Fool's joke, folks.
No, it's not.
This is a true story.
And it's power to the women.
Yeah, to the blind women at that. So I went into early to work. I lived two blocks from the agency, and I wanted to get something done before a commute out to Alameda. And so I went in at about 3 a.m. And about 6 a.m., I got a lot done, by the way, in that 3 hours, because there was nobody else there. And about 6 a.m., I went downstairs to the little cafe that's right beside us, La Cuisine. He treats us so good. Yeah, it's a great, great little restaurant. And I grabbed my box of lox with a bagel in it. You know, and so it had a bagel and lox. I have it in my hand. I go downstairs to Bart because the stairs are right there, and go down the escalator. I still have my box of lox in my hand. And just before the first foot crosses the threshold of the Bart train, somebody tried to do a grab and dash. And so they tried to grab the food out of my hand. And my first reaction, it's mine. And so I grabbed it harder. And I yanked my left arm back. But unfortunately, there's a connective tissue that when I yanked my left arm back, the right one came up. The right one came up. I clocked him so good that I knocked him out. But wait, there's more.
Yeah.
So I not only knocked him out, I knocked him out of the train, and it did not delay the train. I mean, it was a good one. And so the whole train is applauding, because this happens all the time in San Francisco. People grab food, they're hungry. And frankly, I was guilt-ridden the rest of the day, because I would have given him my food if he would have asked for it, but it was mine. And you couldn't have it at that point in time. And so when they were applauding, I just went and I leaned against the seat. I crossed my arms. I said, don't mess with a hangry blind woman at 6 a.m. But to prove how, And so to prove how small of a town San Francisco is, I run into somebody on the train 2 weeks later. They say, you're the blind lady who knocked the guy out of the train. I was like, just remember, don't mess with a hangry blind woman at 6 a.m.
I'm so glad you told that story.
No, on a serious note, thank you for telling that. I think it's a really powerful story. I really do. On a very serious note, we used to hold provider weekends at Enchanted Hills Camp every couple of years. And I'm wondering if you have any plans to bring that back.
I do.
Hallelujah. Thank you,
Sharon. I do. It won't be this year. And hopefully in 2024, we can arrange it. And it's just because we're still in the throes of a major construction project. You guys know that in 2017, the fire wiped it out. We're rebuilding Legacy Camp, but also a large retreat center. State of the art. We'll be running a hospitality program out of there. We just hired a blind chef that will be leading up that. So yes, I will be bringing back provider weekend.
Margie, I want to thank you for asking. I'm going to jump in real quick. Margie, I want to thank you for asking Sharon about that story, because I warned Sharon the other day that if she didn't tell it, I would, and that I would embellish it.
And he would embellish it, I'm sure.
Okay, let's go back over to Zoom. See if we have any.
Who's in the Zoom room?
Yeah.
Actually, all I want to do is a Zoom Zoom.
Room Zoom. Right? Actually, no one's here right now. Or no one's got their hand. No questions.
Okay. We have one on the floor. Okay. Well, tell them to get off the floor.
I think I'm next.
Hi.
At least I got the mic.
There you go.
But I do have to say that ERC is the place to be.
This is Nikki.
So
let noise. I can't, and thank you again for the Target card. I've known about Sharon for quite a while, but I finally met her today about 2 hours ago, and we are already shit disturbers and sisters, and I just cannot tell you how happy I am that you're here to bring the lighthouse back into the light.
I came to bring the light, and we're going to bring it together.
So sorry about that, the interruption. In the last year or two, you know, under leadership of people like Brian and Sherry and Shalina and Anita, of course, CAVVY has begun to be much more of an advocacy force in the blindness community. And I'm just hoping that you will continue in that vein and make the Lighthouse a true leader in advocacy on behalf of people who are blind or have low vision.
So, I certainly will, and I'm as active as I can be in CAVVY, and I know that Anita's going to kick me if I don't get more active in it, but it's been a pretty full dance card in my first 6 months. It's a big agency, but I will definitely, I have a big mouth, and I'm not afraid to use it type thing. So, you know, I love the policy side. And there's so much potential that we can do here. You know, it's been so exciting listening to the updates today between Joe and the DOR staff and then aging, because Lighthouse is very deep right now into CalAIM and applying under the PATH cited where all the money is sitting right now to be able to do these wraparound services and bring that and bring a partner to the table that's doing food as medicine, where meals can be prescribed for diabetics and what have you. And they already have a presence in 38 counties in California, and they're out of Dallas. And so we're working really hard on that. And then I've touched base with a couple of people here that have some issues that they would like for us to work on. And I'm committed to every, I bet you I know who that is. And I bet you it's about transportation. And so we're just going to move on from there. So, but anything, I mean, I'm there to serve this community. I'm there to serve the people who are blind and visually impaired. So if there's an issue and you need a big mouth, I'm there.
Great. Fantastic. Thank you very much.
All right. I think we got time for one more on Zoom. If not, in the
room. All I want to do is a Zoom Zoom.
No questions here.
Okay. Any more questions on the floor?
No more questions on the floor.
Okay, well, I just want to end by saying when I first moved to Northern California in 1970, a lot of us...
I was one.
Yeah, well, the Lighthouse was not called the Lighthouse. It was called the Dark House. So there you go. And it's been wonderful to see the changes. I had the pleasure of working in 1995 when Anita... taking over. So
we love Anita.
I've got a soft spot.
Yeah, another round.
Yay,
of applause.
Yeah, all right. And that's right. She's going to be up next. So with that, let me turn it over to Steve. He might want to ask if we have time for a door prize. I don't know. But anyway, here's Steve coming on. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, Sharon. That was a great story about Bart. I like that. Is our door prize lady in the room? Lisa, are you here?
I'm here.
All right, let's do another door prize.
Okay, let's do $25 Amazon gift card given by the Fresno chapter.
Before I announce a winner, I just have to say that Sarah Harris is up here dancing her butt off while the music is playing. It's really distracting over here for me.
The winner is Simon Uribe. Simon, are you in the room and I can have someone bring you your... Okay. Are you with his chapter? I can give it to you to give to him. Yeah. I'll give it to you, Richard. I'll bring it to you right now.
Describe the door prize, how you the wheel and everything.
So I use an app that is called Wheel of Names. So before convention, I enter all of the registered attendees' names in the wheel. And it's kind of like Wheel of Fortune. Literally, it looks like a Wheel of Fortune on my laptop. You hit the spin button, it spins the names. You can alter the music to different things. And then I just kind of put the mic up to my laptop and you hear the music. It doesn't announce the name, which I don't like. I wish it did. But that's how it works. It's kind of like Wheel of Fortune. I feel like Vanna White.